This episode is brought to you by CBS All Access. If you don't already subscribe to CBS All Access, please use our affiliate link by going to talkthroughmedia.com/CBS. Using our affiliate link gives us a little credit, which helps us to keep bringing you great content. U.S. residents only.
Welcome to episode 47 of the Star Trek Discovery podcast. Gee, 47, where have I heard that from before?
Commander Riker, I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Code 47, captain's eyes only.
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
Yes, number one, what is it?
An incoming message. Code 47, sir.
No, not code 47. Episode 47.
Code 47. Captain's eyes only.
Captain's eyes only. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And on episode 47, I figured a nice little blast from the past from Conspiracy would... one of the many references of the number 47, especially in Next Gen, but pretty much all the way through Star Trek, even in Discovery now. Tonight, we'll be covering two short treks that were both released last Thursday, December 12th. The first one we're going to talk about is Ephraim and Dot. And then the second one is The Girl Who Made the Stars. So they were released this season in episode 4 and episode 5. Although I guess you could do like I did, and I actually watched them in the opposite order.
So did I.
Yeah.
It was totally an accident. But I mean, that's the way it showed up on CBS All Access. I don't know.
Yeah. All right.
I don't think it mattered.
I don't think it really matters. Before we get started, we'll have some feedback covering the last two short treks we released separately, but they were recorded on the same day. That's The Trouble with Edward and Ask Not. So let's open Hailing Frequencies. Okay, so our first one is a voicemail, and this is coming from Steve.
Hey, Mark and Ruthie, it's Steve, and I am sorry that I haven't been very present with these podcasts, but it's just been a lot of TV to get watched. This is for just a quick couple of statements on the first three short treks, and then I'll send a separate one for the cartoon ones. Absolutely loved Spock's Prime Directive question about whether it's actually feasible or not in Q&A. I thought that was really great. And the singing Spock with number one was really good. Trouble with Edward. Absolutely love Rosa Salazar. She's great. And I hope we get to see her again. I echo some of what everybody else said. How did he make it that far? But I've having been in the military, I know that there are times when troublesome, even officers make it far. So, and then I'm along with everybody else. I liked the Pike one a lot, and it definitely gives us a taste of what we might be able to see in a straight-up Pike Enterprise series. But I knew from the beginning that it had to be some sort of test. All right. Talk to you later.
Okay. Well, normally we would play this. Well, thank you so much, Steve, or should I say Chuck?
What?
Your voice fail. But I have to give a because he called me Mark. Now, I get why. Number one, he hosts Panels to Pixels with Mark, who is my co-host for The Walking Dead Talk Through. So I get that, but I can't let that go. I don't know why. I've mentioned this on podcasts before, but when I was growing up, for some reason, that name, Mark, has followed me around since I was a kid. Like, I had one of my aunts used to always call me Mark, and I never got a straight answer as to why, because I didn't know a Mark. There wasn't a Mark in my family. I wondered if, either my parents had another kid that I didn't know about that was Mark, or if my name was originally going to be Mark and I didn't know about it. That's funny. But anyway, yeah. So I've heard that one a lot, but of course my favorite is when someone spells my name Brain, because I say, thank you. Because you don't have to worry if you've misspelt my name, Brain, because I'll take that as a compliment. So, but anyway, that's it. So, aside from getting my name wrong, and I gave him crap for that in Instant Messenger. But anyway, thanks, Steve, for getting back to us.
Oh, God.
All right. So we also got some feedback for the last couple of episodes from our good friend, James the Augmented Sailor. So, Ruthie, why don't you read the first one there?
All right. James talks about the first one he talks about is the trouble with Edward. And he says, hey, guys, just to answer your question in regards to Lucero's rank, she is a captain according to the rings on her cuff. With her command, though, I believe I've talked about this before, but in case my memory is failing me, they definitely could have placed a commander there since it was just a research vessel. In today's Navy, smaller commands will have a commander as the captain. And yes, those commanders are called captain by their crew, because while it's not their rank, it's their position. I did just do a rewatch to check and verify her rank, and OMG, the episode is still hilarious! I'm pretty sure we have talked about that before, about commanders being still being called captain because that's their position, not their rank. Sounds very familiar anyway. I don't know. Maybe I'm remembering something else. I don't know. Anyway. Yeah. So cool. Awesome. Then he goes on to talk about Ask Not. And he says, just listen, guys, you know, Brian, I hadn't even thought of the test Crusher went through. It would have been more on the level of what our young ensign should have been going through here. Kobayashi Maru and tests like what she went through should really be for command personnel in my eyes, the former definitely reserved for captain candidates. Also, I'd like to know who was harping about cadets being aboard starships, because they needed to be set straight. This even happens in today's Navy. Midshipmen will do rotations on board ship to gain that experience. So anyone that questions what she's doing there or has a problem with it, they're just wrong and their problems are unfounded. Just a friendly little tidbit from the old salt of the group. And now I'm going to watch the two newest short treks that just dropped.
There are some people that just cannot accept anything that is new or different. And, you know, we've seen cadets serve on starships. Nog did.
That's true.
Right? So did
Wesley. Duh.
Well, he wasn't technically considered a cadet at the time. I mean, he came back once or twice, but I don't think he actually was serving. But he was, you know, originally an acting ensign and then was like a full ensign, but, you know, just a field promotion, I guess. So he wouldn't technically be considered a cadet, although they could have saved all the, you know, the hand wringers by just making him a cadet during the times that he was in as an ensign, You know, just make him a cadet. Say, well, you know, you've been accepted, and make him a cadet serving on board. Maybe he be serving extension courses in Starfleet Academy or something. I don't know. But still, I don't think, like I said, with Nog, we saw him working as a cadet. So I don't think that, anything seen here is wrong. All right. Daniel from the UK is next, and he says, all caught up. I enjoyed the short trek and the pod. I had initially thought this was where Disco might go when Saru said in Context is for Kings that Discovery had over 300 science experiments on board. We get a few isolated episodes where experiments go awry, and it would help serve the overall plot arc, similar to how Stargate SG-1 used to. So to see it as a short trek was fun, and I hope it's the blueprint for Lower Decks. Edward struck me as the dark side of Stamets rather than Barclay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. If his research had proven useful, he would have gotten through Starfleet on that basis, regardless of interpersonal skills. Similar to Maddox or Kaczynski in TNG or the four ensigns of Voyager in Good Shepherd, Starfleet and by extension, the Federation give people chances, deservedly or not. This just happened to be a very bad call. Smiley face. Yeah. And Steve, he mentioned, or should I say Greg? I'm going to keep on with that. Anyway, now Steve mentioned that as well in his voicemail about people being able to rise up despite, you know, any issues that they have. And, you know, I can say the same thing in my work career. I've seen people rise past their level of incompetence. I get that totally. So, and we got one more from LT from NC. You want to read that one?
All righty. LT lets us know, as a side note, yes, I am SEC31 Trek on Twitter. And the side note was, I thought my first set of comments were lost during the Facebook purge, so I sent more. They were lost, but we found them.
Well, yeah, that was the thing. They were lost. Like when Facebook did its thing and removed those posts, they removed everything. They removed everything that had talkthroughmedia.com from our Facebook group, from our Facebook page, from anything that had been posted.
Conversations.
Yeah. Anything and everything. Yes. So, they were removed. But when it got restored, and we still don't know why it got restored, other than the fact that it should have never been taken off in the first place, it had magically just all returned right back where it was, like if nothing happened.
Yep. Like it was there the whole time, and we just were dumb or something.
Yep. All right. So we're going to do things not like we did last time. Last time we recorded two episodes in one night and we released them separately. This time, I think partially because we didn't get a lot of feedback, especially on the second one we're going to talk about. And they were short treks. In fact, the shortest short treks so far, I believe. We're just going to do it as a single episode, and we're actually not going to do news or anything this week. We're just going to cover this, and then we're going to do news separately because there's a lot going on and I'd rather spend more time doing that. All right. So the first one is Ephraim and Dot, and it was written by a couple of staffers on Discovery. Chris Silvestri and Anthony Marinville. I believe one was a writer's assistant and the other one is a researcher. And they had teamed up to write the Red Angel last season, season 2, episode 10. And the director is someone that hasn't had a lot of experience directing, Michael Giacchino, but I'm not even going to go through his resume because it's so long. But he has written a ton of stuff as a composer. So he's the guy that did the score for the three Kelvin Timeline movies. He's supervised the Short Trek music this time around, and he's, you know, done music for all sorts of TV, all sorts of movies. So we'd be going for an hour if we just talked about all his credits. Yeah, he's got 141 composer credits, so that's a ton. But this is only his second credit for directing. He directed a short last year, I believe, called Monster Challenge. So not sure what that was, but this is only his second credit directing. The description is Ephraim, a humble tardigrade, is flying through the mycelial network when an unexpected encounter takes her on a bewildering adventure through space. I noticed something about these two episodes or short tracks. No rating was given on CBS.com, so I'm not sure what that means, but normally they, you know, give the TV rating like TV PG, TV MA, whatever, but nothing rated this time. And of course, it aired December 12th, 2019. And for the spot, the 47, since this is episode 47, I don't think I saw any 47s at all in either short track. But all right, so let's talk about our ratings for this particular short track. Ruthie, what did you think of Ephraim and Dot?
It was not for me.
Do you have a rating?
Nope.
No rating at all. Okay. Well, I liked it a lot more than you did. I nearly gave it a 10, but I had to pull back because of one particular thing. And I ended up giving it a 9.5, romps through TOS in the movies. So let's go into listener ratings.
All righty. We have James the Augmented Sailor, who says 9 Captain Bateson narrations.
Steve from Oklahoma City gives it 7 out of 10 Star Trek Easter eggs and reminders that I can't wait for Brian to reveal, because I didn't know most of them. Yes, I will have a section of all the references.
All right, LT from NC says, I'm giving this one 8.5 out of 10 cartoon tardigrades.
All right, so let's move on to the yeses.
Yes!
James the Augmented Sailor says, the incorporation of Kirk, Khan, and Sulu dialogue.
Steve from OKC says, Michael Giacchino directed and music.
LT from NC had a couple. He said, the way they made the Discovery Enterprise segue so nicely into the movie Enterprise, perhaps so that it looked like an evolutionary step forward instead of a complete hot rod chop and channel job. Well, I do have a caveat for that one, LT, but we'll get to that in a bit. Lastly, making the much maligned by the critics, Dot 7s make so much more sense. So maybe that's how the Enterprise managed to not catch fire or fall apart between episodes in the 60s. Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I'm sure that certain people are getting their panties in a bunch about the fact that they didn't have them in the Enterprise. Well, they didn't have them in the Enterprise, in the original series, because they couldn't. So that wasn't
similar bots, though.
Well, they had things like Nomad and other stuff like that, but they didn't have like cute little robots, you know.
No, but they had similar types of things, didn't they?
I think they did, but like I say, the one I can think of right now is Nomad at the M5 computer, things like that. I remember, but All right. What did you have for yeses?
I really did not care for either of these episodes, so I'm not really going to have that much to say, Brian. I'm sorry. You're going to have to carry this because they just weren't for me. So,
would you like to play the role of nitpicking Ruthie tonight?
I'm not going to nitpick. I just didn't care for them.
Yeah. I told you before we started recording that I'm not terribly surprised because I know that you haven't really shown a lot of interest in animation, like the lower decks too much.
It's not that I don't like animation. I just don't like animation aimed directly at children anymore. Mm-hmm. It doesn't appeal to me anymore like it used to, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago. I mean, there is still plenty of animation I enjoy. I love The Emperor's New Groove. It's probably my favorite Disney cartoon movie ever. I really like Tom and Jerry, and Tom and Jerry is hilarious, but I just didn't care for it. So I don't really have much to say because it wasn't for me. It's not my bag.
That's understandable. I'll put that in as a big no. All right. Well, I thought that all the TOS and movie references were great, with one major exception, which I'll get to in the nos. But all of the TOS and movie references actually are as follows. So we see Khan. Khan is referenced twice in the movie, or in the short, once indirectly, once directly, but we see Khan in sick bay talking to McCoy and Kirk, and that's of course from Space Seed. We see the Tribbles come out at one point from The Trouble with Tribbles. We see Sulu with his sword and walking around with no shirt on from The Naked Time. We see the giant green hand of Apollo from Who Mourns for Adonais. We see the planet killer, what we used to call the cornucopia. That's what we called it. From the Doomsday Machine. We, of course, see the Tholians building their web in the Tholian web. We see the Excalibian recreation of Abraham Lincoln from the Savage Curtain. We see the USS Reliant attacking the refit Enterprise from Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. That's the indirect reference. And we see the attack by Kruge's Bird of Prey and the subsequent self-destruction of the Enterprise from Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. So all that stuff was amazing. I didn't catch all of them on first watch, but I did catch all of them on second and third watch. I thought that it was a great short trek for kids. I thought that it was a good thing that, you know, kids would like. It was, you know, theme for a kid. I thought it was really well made in that regard. I particularly thought that this one was a lot better made than the next one, to be honest. And I like, you know, even they obviously changed some things about the tardigrade. Tardigrade was quite a bit smaller in this versus the tardigrade we see in Discovery. The .7 looked a little different. It had like these like almost like antlers for antenna. The .7 in that we see in Discovery didn't have that. But, you know, it's several years later, so I guess it could, and you can't really, you know. And I'm not going to make a big thing about the things that are different because, you know, they weren't a big deal. All right, so that's it for the yeses. Let's move on to the noes.
No!
We didn't get any listener noes, but we do have me. And nitpicking me. You know, as much as I love this, I was really disappointed by this one. And the reason for it were some things that they slipped up on continuity. And the first couple that I'll bring up, I'm just going to list them because they're not major things. In fact, I think they're choice. Like the warp nacelle struts on the Enterprise, you know, in the Kirk era, they were Discovery styled. In other words, the Enterprise that we have seen in Discovery has these angled struts that are in like two pieces, and they, you know, they go up in an angle like the movie Enterprise does. Now, I can live with that because it's kind of a retcon at this point, so I'm going to let that one pass. That's not that big of a deal to me. I didn't even pick up this one on my own, but sick bay didn't have any windows in it. So minor gaffe, the fact that I didn't even pick that up on my own, that's not a big thing. And the timeline, the things that we see the two go through and all the little callbacks to TOS and the movie, I don't believe that they appeared in a sequence that was close to what actually happens in TOS. But again, that's not a big deal either, because there's no specific timeline for those episodes. So who's to say that things didn't go in that sequence and we just saw them in a different sequence? So again, that's not a big deal.
The nitpicking me, though, is going to say, hey, you screwed up something really big and I don't want to watch this show anymore.
Shut up, Brian. The thing that got me, and I like actually winced when I saw this, is when there's a transition of the classic TOS Enterprise, it transitions into the movie Enterprise. So the movie Enterprise is going through, and you know, that's the one that fights against the Reliant and fights against the Klingons. And that's the one that Kirk self-destructs, and they marked it, and it's pretty clear if you see it, it's the NCC 1701A. That's wrong.
You can't hardly see it though. I mean, you have to freeze frame and like inch forward frame by frame to even catch it. If you didn't, I mean, I was looking for it the first time and I didn't see it. And I figured that's where it was because I couldn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, well, this is a little.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that was a pretty major continuity mistake, but I'm going to just say,
if you saw it.
Well, that's the thing. And if that's the only
major... It exploded pretty quick.
Well, it was all of the references to the movie Enterprise that we see in the short had it listed as the 1701A. However, this is where I'm going to shut nitpicking Brian down and say, just get over it. It's a mistake. Now, Michael Giacchino, in a tweet after it got released, he owned up to it, and he basically said, yes, we missed that, and it happened because of deadlines. So, like, if the short had, you know, another month before it came out, it would have been fixed, but they had to release it, so it unfortunately went out the way that it did. But so I've kind of meld on it since I first saw it, but you know, it was, you know, clearly, just so you know, the 1701A, they get it at the end of Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, and then that's the ship that we see in Star Trek V and VI. And that's a different ship. That's why it's, you know, really bothered me at first, because it's a different ship. It's not the refit. The refit is the same 1701. So anyway, that's all I'm going to say. And I'll say, shut your face, you nitpicker.
Oh, goodness.
You shouldn't talk to this way. these things happen different times, decades apart, and this was a 7-minute video. What are you talking?
Shut up. Okay.
Oh, goodness.
I think I'm exhibiting multiple personalities.
Maybe a little bit.
No. I'm just making light of it. And I don't want to make the nitpicking, Brian, a regular thing. But this was this was something that, you know, even I saw it, and it, the thing that you didn't like it, but I'll just say, to me, I think if it hadn't been for this mistake, I would have probably given this a 10. Like, I loved it. I loved everything about it, but that really brought it down because that was just not great. But anyway, I'll get off my soapbox.
Well, to be clear, I don't mind when you nitpick. I mean, that's part of who you are. I don't really care for your...
For the record...
extra personality that shows up.
Yeah, well, to be clear, the nitpicking Brian with that awful personality, you're supposed to find him annoying. and that is why I don't want him to show up very often. But for this one thing, I mean... It was an unfortunate mistake to make. That's...
Yeah, but it was just in that one little spot where you had to freeze frame an inch forward to see it.
You could see it in multiple places. It's not... That's not the
I
point.
I don't think you could. I disagree.
No, you could. I
think you could.
Ruthie, I saw it in multiple places. I only took a screen capture of one place.
I think you're not seeing things correctly.
Okay, then. It doesn't matter. The point that I'm saying is, even if I saw it, it's not. It shouldn't be that big of a deal. It's an honest mistake for them to make. It's a mistake that it's easy enough to make because, like...
How much did you have to inch forward to find those?
How much did I have to inch forward to find it?
Yeah, like how much were you like freeze framing and like watching the show like frame by frame to see
No. I wasn't doing that. I saw it. I did not see it the first time through, but on the second time through, I saw it and I wasn't freeze framing. I wasn't expecting to see anything. But I found it and I literally winced when I saw it. I was like, "Ooh." So that wasn't okay, so great.
But if you say so, because you told me about it, but I still didn't see it. So
that's fine. I've already talked more about it than I wanted to. So that's it's an unfortunate mistake they've made, but I don't think it's worth damning the whole short trek. I thought otherwise. It was really well done. So. All right, so let's move on to Ensign Tilly.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the hell? What the hell? Hold your horses!
That's right, she was a cadet at the time. So, all right. We only got one hold your horses, and that was from LT, and he had actually two. So he says, one, I know, it's a cartoon, but the super cute tardigrade was... almost a bit much. I'm trying to imagine this thing mauling Landry. I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, LT, that's true. And then he says, and two, so even after the refit, no one noticed the pile of eggs in the engines. I tried to push it back down, but my old army sergeant had kept popping back on. No one cleaned out the manifolds. No scans ever noticed a pile of alien biological matter in engineering. Yes. The refit just plonked the same old tired engines into a new housing. Yeah, LT, I can't...
That's kind of what I was thinking. I'm like, I knew what they were trying to do with the moving through all the different versions and stuff, but I was like, there's no way that would still be there.
Yeah. Like, literally, you know.
Like, literally no way that would still be there. Someone would have found them and set them free or something.
especially since the refit Enterprise was practically a new ship. I mean, how much of that ship had changed from the original to the refit? I mean,
yeah.
So,
would that area of the ship even still be in existence in the same? I can't get behind it for probably that reason. I was like,
Very true. All right. Do you have anything you want to bring up and hold your horses other than that?
Nope.
This is an irony or whatever you want to call it. Like Michael Burnham, Ephraim is a male name, but Ephraim is a female. So I don't know if that was by design or they wanted. I know that Ephraim was originally the character of the tardigrade was going to be a crew member called Ephraim. So that was from, I think, from Brian Fuller's original story, and they changed it into not being a crew member. So
I don't know. I have no idea. I always thought it was pronounced Ephraim.
Is it Ephraim?
I don't know. That's what I thought.
It could be.
I'm no expert on names, but anyway.
How did the uniforms get there? That didn't make a lot of sense to me either. Like, was that like a laundry chute or something? And would it just go through the replicator and be resynthesized? You know?
I mean, you would think.
You would think. All right. Well, anyway, aside from that, I thought it was pretty good. Let's open hailing frequencies. All right. We got two voicemails, one kind of short and one longer. The first is from Fred.
Hello, Brian and Rusi, and all listeners to Talk Through Media. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Short Tracks, the two animated episodes. First off, I liked a lot that the animation was quite different for both episodes, starting with classic cartoon-like style in Ephraim and Dot. Of course, there were a lot of nice Easter eggs in this episode, starting with the tardigrade, starting with music from the original series, having tribbles, references to the Star Trek movies, not only the series, with the Enterprise blown up. Of course, there were many more references, as the grid and the big pipe from the movie Star Trek IV, with the whales and the big threat to the Earth, and only the whales could communicate with this thing. It really was a joy of recognition. And in the old-fashioned style of making cartoons, and with real cartoony-like styles of movement, for instance, when the tardigrade runs and goes around the corner, that the back of his body is stretched out, and when he is going through two small pipes and openings, that he is somewhat deformed. Although there is an animated series, I like there were not many Star Trek figures in it, so humans, and the humans that were in it were on somewhat great distance. One other topic is the Enterprise 1701A. I did make some screenshots for Brian, 78 to be precise, and then he said in his nitpicky voice, "Well, the one that I wanted is not in it." And then he talked about the Enterprise 1701A, and I didn't know about it. He wanted to warn me, but it didn't get through to me. But I succeeded in getting around 80 screenshots and not having the right one. I mean, in an 8-minute episode, 80 screenshots would mean every 6 seconds. But still, I had to find the 1701A, and I did. I checked where the shift is. And the shift is when the Enterprise goes through the tube and we see the grid, it's still 1701. Then we see Lincoln, and then we get the next shot, and that's when the Reliant is attacking the Enterprise, and at that moment it's the 1701A. So perhaps the Reliant didn't only shoot at the Enterprise, but also spray painted a nice A on the 1701. But what I just said is not true at all, because it's really another spaceship. It's not just a spray-painted A. I put some comparison screenshots on the Talk Through Media Facebook page and then in the thread of the feedback for this episode. Mistake? I don't think so. If you put a whole new space vessel in it, it must be on purpose. There is a lot of time shifting and time, different time moments in it anyhow. So we see the hand, we see the grid, we see Lincoln, we see this big pipe for the whales, etc. So, and that's not all at the same period. So there is time shifting happening anyhow. But on the other hand, it would be silly if in the beginning the tardigrade is dealing with the Enterprise and then follows the Enterprise during warp, and then you assume it would be the same Enterprise and not a time shift, and it would be another one. And then the second episode was quite different. A different style, having Michael at a young age, not able to sleep, and her father telling her a fairy tale. I think it was very much Lion King-like, almost Christmas-style storytelling. Too much Disney-like, although it's not Disney. I liked that one less. It also was less funny than the first one. The nicest detail was the fact that Michael's stuffed animal was a tardigrade. Okay, that was my short feedback about two short tracks. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands. And probably until the Picard series, or actually a short track first about Picard.
Well, thank you so much, Fred. And of course, we have to play. And I plan to use a lot of those screen captures that I was able to catch on the blog post. So thank you so much. And
you're both hallucinating.
Ruthie is skeptical. But anyway.
Also, I appreciate your impression of nitpicking, Brian. That was fantastic.
I am going to retire after this. I don't want to come back. Anyway.
That's fine.
No one's going to stop me from not doing that anymore. Sparingly would be the thing to say. But anyway, yeah, it like made me think of they had maybe done it intentionally. But once I saw that tweet today from Michael Giacchino, I'm like, okay, there was no intent there. It just was an honest mistake that they made. So, but it is kind of ironic that the one thing I wanted him to catch, he didn't catch.
That is hilarious.
I felt so bad. I felt so bad.
None of this microscopic 1701A versions that I'm the only one who saw.
I wasn't the only one that saw it.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry, but I wasn't the only one.
Oh yeah, okay, you keep telling yourself that.
Oh, I'm not. I am not the only one that saw it. There was definitely some time shifting. Like I guess the concept would be that the tardigrade experiences time differently than we do. And guess
I got that too.
Yeah, because
that fits in with the mycelial network and what we know about it. So
yeah, I didn't exactly, and I didn't have a problem with that. Like I said, even if the little features were done in slightly out of order, I mean it wasn't very much out of order because they were mostly, it started in season one and then season two and then season three. I think they were largely in order, so I didn't have a problem with that at all. So anyway, thank you so much, Fred. We got a second voicemail for this episode and the other one, I guess, from the second voicemail of the night from Steve. So let's play that.
Hey, Brian and Ruthie, it's Steve, and I just wanted to comment about the short treks 4 and 5. I didn't get a chance to watch them again
today, but really enjoyed them. It might be a taste of what we're going to get with Lower Decks. I did have a question about that little robot. Have we seen those before? Is that in the canon? But I didn't like the nostalgia of the Ephraim and Dot episode and seeing the different Enterprise through the ages. And I love the showing us the story that we heard in Discovery. So I can't wait to hear you guys' thoughts. Talk to you later.
And that was short and sweet, much like a short trek. So thank you so much, Steve, for your voicemail. Short and sweet. The one thing I'll respond to, yes, the little Dot robot that we saw, the Dot 7s come out during the attack from the Section 31 ships in the season finales, Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2. So it's the only time we've ever seen them. And it looked a little different. I think it was, those were blue, like I said before, and didn't have the antenna. So they, you know, they made it more character-like, and I'm okay with that. All right. We got next bit of feedback from James. You want to read that one?
All right. James, the augmented sailor, says, "This was cute, a little derivative of Looney Tunes, but entertaining. This is definitely another step into uncharted territory for Trek. Wondering if this is a setup for the Nickelodeon series in the works. It wasn't quite what I expected it to be, as I thought it would be more of a Lower Decks setup, but I dug the montage of classic TOS scenes happening throughout the misadventures of our new little friends. It's always a joy to hear Kelsey Grammer's voice. I find it to be one of those James Earl Jones, Morgan Freeman type that makes you want to have him narrate your life." I also really dug the almost contrasting animation styles between the realistic renderings of our established characters to the fun cartoonish style of Ephraim and Dot. This one also doesn't move any plot points along, but was just entertaining. Yeah, I agree. I enjoy Kelsey Grammer's voice.
And that's probably why you didn't enjoy this short track, because it wasn't Kelsey Grammer.
That's funny.
It was actually Kirk Thatcher.
Ah.
And we see him in the credits. Now, do you know who Kirk Thatcher is?
No clue who Kirk Thatcher is. I know who Kelsey Grammer is.
Well, of course you do. Okay, so, but you know Kirk Thatcher because Kirk Thatcher played a very interesting character in Star Trek IV. Do you remember when they're on the bus and this punk is playing his ghetto blaster really loud, playing the yeah. Well, that song was written by Kirk Thatcher, and the punk was played by Kirk Thatcher. So that I haven't seen anything about that to find out like why or how he got involved with this, like, you know, 33 years later. But he was I know that he was also part of the crew for Star Trek IV. So anyway, he played that role, and he was the narrator that we hear at the beginning and at the end of the episode. And yes, he did sound a lot like Kelsey Grammer. Listening to it again today, I could see where, James, you could make that mistake. But no, in fact, it was Kirk Thatcher. And of course, I never really heard Kirk Thatcher say anything until now. So, except for maybe what he said on the bus. But, and of course, that's the one, Spock gives him the Vulcan neck pinch and he falls on his ghetto blaster, and the ghetto blaster stops, and the whole bus gives a
applause,
big applause to Spock. And has pretty funny part in the Star Trek IV. Yeah. We got a couple of little notes from two more listeners. LT from NC, of course. He says, "In the end, I really liked it. There may not be a hook to anything else, and I'm okay with that." And Aaron from Akron says, that was awesome. I thought it was Kirk in the beginning too. Ah, well. And it was actually Kirk in the beginning. Kirk Thatcher in the beginning.
I thought he was doing a really good impression of Leonard Nimoy in the beginning.
It seemed like the accent kind of changed as he went on, but it definitely was the same guy. So that is it for our listener feedback. Is there anything that you want to bring up? You've been pretty quiet on this one, so.
Not really. I don't really have anything to add.
I didn't think so. And the only thing that I haven't said is that it was the NCC 1701, no bloody A, B, C, or D. That's, of course, from Relics, the episode from Next Generation that Scotty comes out of a transporter that's malfunctioning in the buffer. So he comes out of the buffer, wakes up, 75 years later, or whatever it is. Uh-huh. So, yeah, made me think of that. But okay, I will shut up about the A and let's move on. I don't think we have a lot to say about the second short trek, but that's why we're going to cover it here. That one is titled The Girl Who Made the Stars, and that was written by Brandon Schultz, and he is a writer's assistant on Star Trek Discovery. He wrote season 2, episode 11's Perpetual Infinity last season, and it is directed by executive producer Olatunde Osunsanmi, who has directed several episodes from Discovery seasons 1 and 2. And the description is, when a lightning storm in space, which I hate that.
Yeah, it's not really possible, but anyway, yep. Moving on.
Scares a young Michael Burnham. Her father aims to ease her fears with a mythical story about a brave little girl who faced her own fears head on. And the date of that, of course, was December 12th, 2019. And again, no rating was given. Ruthie, what did you think of this episode? And I think I know.
I didn't really care for it.
So let me ask you this. Of the two, which one did you like better?
Probably the one with the tardigrade.
Yeah, I figured. And that's my take as well. I enjoyed this one, but in the end, it felt filler to me. It was nothing that you needed to see. So,
well, it was disappointing. They were going, I thought, oh, this is going to be cool. They're going to show, they're going to have some young Michael things. It didn't really even look like her. I don't know how. I mean, did they not have any pictures of Sonequa as a child that they could model their animation off of or something? I don't know. I was disappointed in the content because I thought, this isn't really a story about Michael. Mm-hmm. So I felt like that was a missed opportunity.
Yep. Well, I had a similar thought, and I felt like the characters didn't look like, now I'll say, when she became a queen, I thought that that character looked a lot like Sonequa Martin Green.
I didn't think so.
No?
Nope. I still didn't think that it looked like her.
Wow.
Again, still disappointing.
But that was the only character that looked like her, because I thought that the father didn't look like him at all. And it was actually kind of, I found it a little distracting how much he didn't look like him. And I guess the kid didn't look like Michael either, but especially I thought the father didn't look much like him, and I have more stuff on that. But on the whole, like as a story, I liked it, but I had a lot more issues with it. So I'm going to give it a 7.5 stories that I didn't really need to see.
7.5 wastes of your time.
I wouldn't call it a waste.
7.5 minutes you'll never get back.
I wouldn't say that. I enjoyed it, but Otherwise, I did think that it had some issues, which we'll get to in a minute. But we've got three ratings from listeners. So why don't you give all three of those, since they're short.
Okay, James the Augmented Sailor says, I'll give The Girl That Made the Stars 8.5 stuffed tardigrades being clutched by Michael. Steve from OKC says, 8 out of 10 story time. That's it. LT from NC says, I'm giving this one 8 out of 10 bedtime stories.
All right. It's hardly even worth it, but...
Yes!
We didn't get any yeses from any listeners. The one yes that I will... bring up is that they did at least use Kenrick Green, who played Mike Burnham. And I won't really get into the fact that Kenrick Green is Sonequa Martin Green's husband and the fact that it's creepy that the husband is playing the father. Oh, wait a second. I guess I just did, didn't I? But anyway, I thought it was good that at least they used the same actor for that. That's all we have for yeses. And, you know, I thought it was a nice little story. I guess I could give it a yes for that. But no's?
No!
We didn't get any no's from anybody. Do you have anything that you want to bring up as a no?
I mean, just kind of what I already started going into. I don't really want to dwell because I could really go down the negative rabbit hole, but... like I said, I just kind of felt like the story was wasted. It wasn't really a Star Trek story. It was a story. It was a folktale story that served absolutely zero purpose as far as Star Trek goes. If you want to make a folktale cartoon about that, by all means, do it.
Yeah.
But don't try and convince me that this is a Star Trek story, because it's not. Like, it takes place on Earth, for one. It takes place on Earth a long time ago. It's not even a different planet. Like, I mean, you could kind of say the same thing about the Saru stuff, because it's kind of like when they were primitive, more or less.
Yeah.
They've always kind of been primitive, but then they were, so you know, had a direct tie-in and all that kind of stuff. But this was like, and like I said, it was a complete wasted opportunity. We could have... had a chance to see more young Michael, aside from the very few flashbacks that we got, but they didn't go that route. Instead, they showed a scared little girl who needed a nightlight, and then her daddy told her a story that had nothing to do with Star Trek, and then she didn't need her nightlight anymore. It was tropey and unnecessary. I didn't really care for the animation.
Yeah, it didn't really have anything to do with Star Trek. The only thing that made it Star Trek was the fact that they
called it a short trek.
And they used a couple of characters from Star Trek Discovery. I mean, that was the one positive thing I guess you could say, is actual characters from Star Trek Discovery, you know, that were part of the USS Discovery, not the Enterprise. So this is like the only episode that actually features characters that are part of the show that are going to continue to be on the show in season 3. But aside from that, there really wasn't anything there. So I thought it was filler. I think I said that before. I thought that it was obviously rushed. And when I say that, particularly Mike Burnham, Michael's father, didn't look at all like Kenrick Green. Really did not look like him even a little bit. It was obviously rushed. The thing that really made it seem rushed, and I had to just go back a couple times I hit rewind, because I was wondering if like the dialogue wasn't in sync with the animation, you know, like the video itself had gotten out of sync, but that wasn't the case. The lips and the dialogue didn't match, which tells me that this was rushed. Like, it wasn't that it was sloppy. I think it fell into the same issue that the first short track, according to Michael Giacchino, it ran into deadlines. And I think especially looking at the father talking to Michael, you could see that, like, as he's talking, their lips are moving and not in any way that looked like it would be them speaking. It just was sloppy. And there were, you know, some little parts in it too that I thought that were sloppy. If anything, this one felt even more rushed than the first one. So it makes me wonder, like, why they decided to release them together like this. Like, they could have, if that one needed a little more time, they could have released it later in the month or something, you know?
Or why do it at all? I mean,
I understand why they did it. They wanted to experiment. This was some experimental stuff. They want to try to expand what it means to be Star Trek. So I'm okay with that. But to me,
yeah, but not at the sacrifice of quality. I mean, come on. I don't understand why. I really didn't feel like, I mean, the first one, I guess, was better in that regard, but I don't know. I still kind of was like, sure.
Yep. I agree. I agree with you. Let's move on to Hold Your Horses.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the hell? What the hell? Hold your horses.
And the only thing I wanted to bring up, and I thought this was interesting, but Mike Burnham is wearing a Section 31 badge. And I had to go back to Perpetual Infinity and just see if he had been wearing one, and I could not see him wearing one on camera in that flashback, but it was pretty clear, like, this picture that I've got in the show doc, I had to, like, brighten it up some just to see it, but you could clearly see that it is a black badge that he's wearing. So that's a Section 31 badge, and I you can't really see it in this shot, but I did see in one particular angle that we see the side that doesn't go down as far on that little insignia was silver in color, not black. So that's what the Section 31 badge looks like. It's mostly black with a little bit of silver on the one side. So
that was probably a mistake.
You think that was a mistake?
If he wasn't wearing Section 31 stuff in the actual episode, then yeah, it was probably, they probably didn't realize what they were doing when they did that.
Or
they didn't understand the implications or connotations of giving him a dark emblem on his shirt. That would be my take on that, because I don't think that implies that he was Section 31.
Well, I don't know why it wouldn't imply it, because we know that they were working for Section 31, so it stands to reason that he would be.
I'm sorry, I can't really look at either of these as canon.
Okay. I'm trying to give it the benefit of the doubt to think that it might be canon.
Nope, so. Not me. Sorry. Not going to do it. I feel like, I mean, like you said, it was rushed. It was sloppy. They probably didn't realize what they were doing.
Okay. I will disagree with you on that, but I'm not going to disagree with you much, because let's move on to our feedback section. All right. Well, we only got a little bit of feedback. You want to read James's?
Sure. James, the Augmented Sailor, says, it was a cute story. The animation was really nice. There's not really much to say on this one. It didn't advance any plot points, and I don't think it was setting anything up. Just a sweet little bedtime story. It was enjoyable.
Yep. LT from NC had a couple of points. He says, it was a cute story, and compared to several of the other short tracks, it is pretty light stuff. However, it was a nice story, and I enjoyed watching it. The hook to the season might be along the lines of, this is a story that Michael's dad told her when she was anxious, and maybe she'll throw this out while she is struck wherever she seems to be stuck in the trailers. Maybe. And then he says, my only real point to point out was, did anyone else notice that dad had on a Section 31 badge? Yes, in fact, I did, as I mentioned. And then we got one more thing, and that's Aaron from Akron just simply says, it's definitely a nice parable, but why? And I didn't mention this, but apparently the story was quite a bit different than the story that was mentioned in the season premiere. Apparently, the young girl made the stars up by throwing, I think, dust in the air or something like that. And the fact that it used an alien, that wasn't part of the story either. So that I heard it argued that it took agency away from the character, like Michael's character, or not Michael's character, but the young girl's character for doing this. I don't know. I was kind of surprised when I heard that on another podcast, but I guess that's true. But they said it more than I'm going to bring up at this point. I think we both agree, but it was filler. I don't think we needed to see this one. I enjoyed the experiment. I thought it was relatively beautiful, but it had its issues and it was filler. So I didn't like this one anywhere near as much as I liked the other one. And that's going to be it. Now, we know that there's a lot of news to go through. We're not going to go through it right now. Of course, we lost DC Fontana. The character, I don't have his name, that played Charlie X. But of course, the big one is Rene Auberjonois, who played Odo. And I have a lot to say about that one, but we're going to cover that next time. So let's just tell people how you can contact us. Ruthie, why don't you take that?
Okay. To submit your feedback or connect with us, you can go to talkthroughmedia.com/feedback. You can submit text or audio there. You can call us at 216-232-6146. You can send us an email, StarTrekDiscovery@talkthroughmedia.com. Or you can post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/StarTrekTTMpodcasts. Or you can tweet us at StarTrekTTM.
Great way to support us is to share our posts that come on the Talk Through Media page at facebook.com/talkthroughmedia.
So if you're not following us there, follow us there.
Yes. Like that page.
That's what I meant.
You can subscribe to us in the podcast client of your choice, like Apple Podcasts, for example. And if you're podcast client like Apple Podcasts allows you to do it, please leave us a rating or review. That'll help more people find us. And of course, tell a friend. One thing I will mention, I will bring this up, Podchaser. Go to podchaser.com. That is a place where you can leave reviews and follow us and anything that gets posted there. That'll actually let you know when new episodes have been released. So if for some reason you listen to us on the talkthroughmedia.com page or through YouTube or whatever, you can actually go to podchaser.com and follow us there. So, and you can actually leave us a rating or review there too. And last thing, of course, we want to bring up our Patreon. We've got some Patreon stuff coming soon. That's at patreon.com/Brian and Ruthie. And we want to thank our patrons, Clint, LT, James, Fred, and Kyle. Thank you so much. And of course, subscribe to our other podcast, the Star Trek Picard Cast. And we have some content coming up. In fact, the next thing we record will be for the Star Trek Picard Cast. So. And of course, you can also hear me on the Walking Dead talk through. That's in hiatus right now, but you can hear many episodes of me on there and Ruthie until a point. The next episode of this podcast, we're going to cover news. So I guess that will be next, but we will also do a short trek for season 2, episode 6, which is titled Children of Mars. And supposedly that one is Picard based, so we'll probably have that on both podcast feeds since that'll be Picard based. So, but just remember, if you want to listen to the Picard episodes, subscribe to the Star Trek Picard cast. Anyway, that's it for this week's episode. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.